Good day, and welcome to the From Alabama Shame to Community Engagement Recent Developments in the Fight for Immigration Justice at the State Level Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Palak Sheth, Deputy Director of Network Advancement. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining today's call. A specific thanks for those of you that are in the D.C., New York area where there are, I believe, snowstorms. Sam and myself both are lucky enough to be outside where it's beautiful and sunny outside. But thank you for joining us today to our final call in 2013 on immigration. We posted a series of calls this year discussing immigration reform and the bill that passed the Senate, advocates' calls on what progressives can do to help the bill pass the House, and also what areas of the bill we want to pay most attention to. My name is Pollock, and I'm the Deputy Director of Network Advancement at the American Constitution Society. I'm very excited to introduce our speaker, Sam Brook, Senior Staff Attorney from the Southern Poverty Law Center's Immigrant Justice Project. Sam was deeply involved in the litigation against Alabama's House Bill 56 and other anti-immigrant state laws in Georgia and South Carolina. By way of background for today's call, in 2011, Alabama enacted the most draconian anti-immigration law in the country, House Bill 56. In addition to the Show Me Your Papers provision present in the Arizona Senate Bill 1070, the Alabama bill criminalized hiring and renting to illegal immigrants, among numerous other discriminatory and unconstitutional actions. In October of 2013, major provisions of this bill were blocked after a successful challenge from the Southern Poverty Law Center and other groups. Sam has led the Southern Poverty Law Center's litigation against the Alabama's anti-immigrant law and is on the litigation teams challenging Georgia's and South Carolina's anti-immigrant laws. Sam has a background in multiple things, including litigation challenging law enforcement abuses, particularly for unlawful arrests and racial profiling. Without further ado, I want to introduce Sam, who is a graduate who graduated magna cum laude from NYU's law school and also holds a joint degree from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Before coming to the Southern Poverty Law Center, Sam clerked for the Honorable Joan Gottschall of the U.S. District Court of Northern District of Illinois. He has worked with the Connecticut and Alabama affiliates of the ACLU on cases related to free speech, voter disenfranchisement, and prolonged detention of immigrant detainees. Today we're here to talk about the anti-immigration laws and the movement from the state level and progress that's been made. I'll turn it over to you, Sam. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Pollock, and thank you everyone else who's joined us today. What I'd like to do today is discuss a little bit about what happened in Alabama, the litigation, and kind of the response that happened at the community level. But then I'd also like to step back and kind of look nationally at what we've been seeing in the last year at the state level in response to immigration reform. I think that a lot of focus and attention has justifiably been paid to the federal level and what's happening in Washington, D.C., and certainly sometimes that has been a frustrating thing to watch, at least certainly from the outside, from my perspective. But there's actually really good and inspiring news coming at the state level that I think has gotten less attention in the past year that I wanted to talk about and make sure everyone was informed of so they could see that certainly there has been a lot of progress made in 2013, even if we haven't seen that necessarily from Washington, D.C. So stepping back and focusing particularly on Alabama and HB 56, putting this in the national context, of course, Alabama passed its law in 2011. It was largely a copycat, but with a whole lot of add-ons to the Arizona's SB 1070. As the sponsor in the House proposed it, described it, he said, it's Arizona's law with an Alabama twist. And the Alabama twist involved, not only the provisions that existed in the Arizona law, like attempting to criminalize failing to have one's alien registration papers, which would affect not only lawfully present individuals, but would effectively criminalize the presence of undocumented individuals in the state, to criminalizing the solicitation of work if one did not have federal work authorization, even though Congress, when it passed IRCA, specifically created a balance between recognizing on the one hand that people are going to work and are going to try to provide for their families, And so the kind of balance that Congress created was to say it's not criminal to solicit work so long as the employee does not engage in fraudulent activity in that process. Alabama also criminalized day laborer activities, soliciting day laborer work, or attempted to criminalize it. And this actually, interestingly, was completely untethered to immigration. It had nothing to do with immigration status. Even U.S. citizens would have been targeted under this law had it gone into effect. They created a new crime that would deal with harboring and transporting. And not only providing rides across the state or to the corner store, as they described it when talking about it publicly, but also they attempted to criminalize renting. And so in a way, this was a statewide version of what Farmers Branch attempted to adopt in its ordinance and what Hazleton attempted to adopt in its ordinance. I'll touch briefly on those cases a little bit later on. Alabama also had a provision in its law that would invalidate contracts and make them unenforceable in state court if one of the parties was undocumented, him or herself. The courts would later describe this as attempting to achieve the civil death of undocumented immigrants within the state of Alabama. The other kind of three provisions that get a lot of attention, one dealt with the schools, K-12 schools, where the schools themselves would be charged with asking children and also their families about what their immigration status was when they were registering and enrolling in the schools. Another provision called Section 30 of the law, it was modified throughout the course of the litigation, but initially criminalized any attempt by an undocumented immigrant to engage in any, quote, business transaction with the state or a political subdivision of the state. There was a lot of back and forth between different camps on what this business transaction thing meant. The text of the statute was clear. It said, quote, any transaction between a person who did not have proof of lawful presence and a state entity, including political subdivisions, the city. And so we saw, as this provision unfortunately went into effect, that there was a lot of disagreement and disparate understandings of what this meant, ranging from some locations that said that in order to get a library card that women have to provide their immigration status, to the city of Huntsville promulgating a series of regulations and advisory notices going out to the city saying that anything from getting a license for your dog to getting sewage connections hooked up would all require proof of immigration status if this provision were to be enforced. Finally, there was the Show Me Your Papers provision, the exact same as what existed in the Arizona law, requiring police under certain circumstances to be inquiring about immigration status. Now, as in the other states, and in 2010, Arizona passes its law, Alabama passes its in 2011. You saw a similar law in Georgia and South Carolina in 2011. A law that had similarities but also quite a few differences also was passed in Utah and Indiana. So you saw this development of these laws in 2011, and in Alabama, as in the other states, it was met with legal challenges. We were part of the legal team that was fighting it on behalf of the private plaintiffs, along with our excellent colleagues at the ACLU Immigrant Rights Project, National Immigration Law Center, MALDEF, Latino Justice Pearl Def, Asian Law Caucus, AAJC, among others. And also the United States eventually filed suit in Alabama as well, challenging the law. For better or for worse, and please don't hold this against me for too long, we did not do nearly as well out of the gate in Alabama. In fact, when we got the initial ruling by the court in September of 2011, it was frankly catastrophic on the ground. Many of the provisions were initially permitted in Alabama to go into effect. And while we saw most of the provisions blocked in Arizona, most of the provisions blocked in Georgia and South Carolina, in Alabama, key parts did go into effect, particularly that alien registration provision that I mentioned a moment ago that made it a state crime for someone to fail to have their registration papers with them. In the first weekend when this went into effect, someone was immediately arrested. This person, just to show kind of the insanity of the situation that was presented, was in immigration proceedings, was regularly appearing at immigration court as was required, and was out on bond, had been taken into immigration custody and then been released on bond at the discretion and decision of the immigration judge, had their bond paper with work with them, showed this to the police officer in Alabama who stopped them, and yet they were nevertheless arrested, charged under this provision, and ultimately pled guilty under this provision in the very first weekend. This was documented, the chaos and chaotic scene that existed in Alabama in the immediate aftermath was documented pretty well in the media. You know, there were stories appearing in major papers across the country talking about various neighborhoods and localities within the state where, unfortunately, the immigrant community was feeling very much under siege. The schools provision definitely, I think, was a huge part of that. And so people were picking up and leaving. And, you know, the New York Times described one particular town called Albertville as turning into a ghost town overnight because large portions, at least in some of the communities there, some of the neighborhoods there, were picking up and leaving. But in the longer perspective in the picture of this, I think there's a very different picture in Alabama now. You know, we continued the litigation fight. We took an emergency appeal to the 11th Circuit. We got two more of the provisions blocked in the 11th Circuit when we asked for an injunction pending appeal. Then a few months later, when we had oral argument, after oral argument, the 11th Circuit enjoined two more provisions before it issued its full opinion. We had oral argument in March of 2012. The 11th Circuit held oral argument even though it knew